Support for WMNF comes from our members and Self-Storage Centers of America. Located at Causeway Boulevard in US 301, Self-Storage Centers of America offers both climate and non-climate controlled storage solutions, as well as boat and RV storage that all feature access and security 24 hours a day. More at 813-621-7867. And if you're wondering what happened to Alan Watts, used to live right here at this time, he's now on WMNF HD3, The Source, Tuesdays at 10 a.m. And here are all our news and public affairs stations on an HD radio, that's HD3, The Source, or always on WMNF.org. All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. Delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, which we'll be speaking with singer-songwriter Richard X. Heyman. About everything from his nearly 30 years of animal rescue in New York City to his huge blast of new music just released yesterday, which includes some animal songs. In fact, we're kicking off the show today with one of those new animal songs. This is Richard X. Heyman with Birds here on Talking Animals.
Upon the floor, they follow me. Feathers all the green, the others to be black. The words of fire can shock me anymore. Now the days are getting dark, the trees are turning stark through winter flee. And I'm alone here in the park. There's no sound except the dogs, but they don't see. Oh, and how about the gilded bed? They wait right on the edge so patiently for their feet and drop down landing by the hedge. Then gratefully will dredge up every street. Fools without a trace of heart approach to play their part, but I let it sail. And I don't even try to start. I've gotten way too smart, I let them run. Oh, I'm so much brighter than you know. I'm sighted walking slow, yet anxious free. Through the city crowd, I'm spotted as I go. Eyes peering down below, so cautiously. Now the days are getting dark. The trees are turning stark, ruined to sleep. And I'm alone here in the park. There's no sound except the dogs, but they don't see. Oh, and getting dark, the trees are turning stark, through winter flee. And I'm content here in the park, there's no sound except the dogs, but they don't see. Oh, and babies lie and have a sleep, out through the door I creep, my bags are full. The smell is drifting down, it's smelling soft and deep. I hear a siren weep in this parting town.
All right, that was Richard X. Heyman with Birds, a brand new animal tune to ease us in today's edition of Talking Animals. My name is Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few moments, we'll be speaking with today's guest, the aforementioned Mr. Heyman, an extraordinary, underappreciated singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist who's been rescuing cats and other animals in New York City for nearly 30 years and been creating music, great, great music, much longer than that. Yesterday, in fact, he released Tears and Other Stories, two complete albums totaling 31 tracks, including Birds that we just heard, And another song that's about cat rescue that we'll hear towards the end of the show. I should note that tears here is as in levels, T-I-E-R-S. Anyway, we'll discuss music, animal rescue, animal songs, and animal songs about animal rescue, and more when we speak with Richard X. Heyman in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the Comedy Corner. We'll play Name That Animal 10. The winner will receive a copy of Richard's new albums, Tears and Other Stories. And we'll speak with Barbara Howard from Friends of the Tampa Bay National Wildlife Refuge, to which all proceeds from this Saturday's Birdstock extravaganza will be donated. More on Birdstock in just a moment. Right now, it's time for animal news and announcements. A look at items of interest in animal news, locally, regionally, nationally, sometimes internationally, as well as announcements of local events. So let's turn now to interesting and or notable developments in animal news. We also will, of course, welcome your comments along the way. You can share those instantly if you'd like by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. So, let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Our first item, of course, comes 1 year anniversary, if that's the right term, of the BP oil spill. This piece comes from Reuters, Dateline Biloxi, Mississippi. A federal agency's practice of returning weakened dolphins to deeper Gulf of Mexico waters is thwarting efforts to probe dolphin deaths after last year's BP oil spill, scientists said. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, meanwhile, confirmed that two dolphins stranded at low tide on the Louisiana coastline were returned to water deep enough for them to swim away. Quote, these animals had no signs of external oil and were deemed healthy and robust, NOAA spokeswoman Kim Amendola said, adding that beach releases are a viable option in some circumstances. The animals were pushed to deeper water by our stranding network partner, the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, and swam off on their own, Amendola said. Researchers said weakened and stranded dolphins should instead be rescued and tested. Moby Selangi, director of the Institute of Marine Mammal Studies in Mississippi, said returning the dolphins to deeper waters also was undermining efforts to determine who is responsible for the rash of sea animal deaths in Gulf waters. Quote, we are not able to conduct necropsies on these animals anymore either, Selangi said. This is all because of the BP criminal investigation. The U.S. Justice Department is using dolphin testing in its investigations into the 2010 explosion aboard the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig, which killed 11 workers and unleashed a torrent of oil that fouled the shorelines of four states. Mentioned a moment ago, Birdstock 2. That's happening. That's 60 music acts on 8 stages over 12 hours of continuous music this Saturday, April 23rd, beginning at noon on the Quarry Avenue Business District in St. Petersburg. All proceeds will be donated to the nonprofit Friends of the Tampa Bay National Wildlife Refuges, or earmarked for the protection and enhancement of the essential seabird habitats of Tampa Bay. Organized by a coalition headed by the Beach Theater, the Quarry Area Business Association, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Birdstock 2 is expected to draw thousands to Quarry, where 6 indoor and 2 outdoor stages will feature top musical acts, including Sarasota Slim, Ronnie Elliott, Wendy and the Soul Shakers, the Tomcats, Crash Mitchell, Nathan McKeon, Dirty Spoons and Trash Review, and more. It's all, let's just say, very reasonably priced, but they're also asking that for a very also reasonable donation, you'll get a wristband that provides all-day access to the Beach Theater, plus gifts, merchant discounts, other perks. Last year, Birdstock 1 raised over $15,000 to support the Suncoast Seabird Sanctuary's Gulf Coast oil spill response effort. So, again, we'll have a interview a bit later with Barbara Howard from Friends of the Tampa Bay National Wildlife Refuge. But again, all the proceeds will be donated to that. Also, of course, coming up, among other holidays, it's Easter on Sunday. And try to have someone from one of the local sort of rabbit organizations on the show. That didn't quite work out. So take something actually that I found quite good, really, in the Dear Abby column, because it's also mostly information from yet another rabbit organization. So Easter is coming. Many families still purchase live rabbits as pets for their children. Parents often think rabbits are good, quote-unquote, starter pets and don't understand what they are getting into. As a result, many of these poor creatures end up in animal shelters, and children learn that pets are disposable. Before getting rabbits, people should consider, are they willing to make a 7 to 10 year commitment? That is the average lifespan of a rabbit. What will happen if their child gets bored with the bunny after 6 months? Is there a place in their house for a rabbit cage? Are they willing to pay to get it spayed, neutered, and provide vet care? Do they know that most rabbits hate to be held? Will their child accept this? Are they willing to ensure that children under 7 won't pick up the rabbits without supervision? Rabbits are fragile. Their legs or spine will break if accidentally dropped. Can they provide 3 hours of exercise every day in an escape-proof area outside its cage? Do the adults want the rabbit too? A rabbit should be a family pet. And those are the key things, and again, there is a local organization that we'll probably will have on the show at some point called the Tampa Bay House Rabbit Society, and there's all kinds of important information along these lines and others at tampabayhrs.org. Now, as you probably know, one premise of Talking Animals is blending in some music and comedy with the announcements and sometimes, occasionally at least, upsetting information. So in that spirit, I would like to call your attention to my new favorite talking animal. It's on Funny or Die. That's the great website of comedy pieces. Will Ferrell and others, Adam McKay. Anyway, let's just say there's a pig with Donald Trump's hair and wearing a Donald Trump-like suit, and in Trump's voice, espousing Trump's newfound apparently birther's view. Mostly focusing on the birth certificate. So it's less than a minute long. My wife sent it to me this morning. Said, try to watch this before the show. Usually I'm pretty swamped in, so I thought, okay, well, there must be something to this. She was right. Absolutely hilarious, including the payoff. So funnyordie.com. Find the Donald Trump birther piece. It's less than a minute. You'll be richly rewarded. So also coming up Saturday, April 30th, there's a yard sale fundraiser. And that is to benefit Countless Cats Rescue, servicing Hillsborough, Pasco, and Pinellas counties. Strand feral cats are humanely trapped, fixed, and vaccinated. So to support that effort, this yard sale fundraiser will be from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Again, Saturday, April 30th, the Sunoco Tampa Office Building, 203 South Falkenberg Road, Brandon, Florida. And it happens to rain that day. There's a rain date already set for May 7th. So if you have any questions about this, you can go to countlesscatsrescue@gmail.com. And if you'd like to donate some items to help these folks raise some more funds to help the cats, you can send an email to octanetailormade@tampabay.rr.com. That's octanetailormade@tampabay.rr.com. And, all right, you know what? I think that's going to do it for us now. Let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Matt Bronger with a piece we're calling Owls Dalmatians. Owls/Dalmatians, perhaps. On today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Anyway, Harry Potter. Like, I like them, I like the books, I like the movies, but I think they send the wrong message to our kids. And that's that it's okay to own an owl for a pet. No. Okay? I'm from Oregon, I know. Owls are made of claws, feathers, and hatred. That's it. Like, owls don't give a crap. You ever look at an owl, the rage and hatred in his eyes? Up in a tree, like, who? Who? Who's next to die? It's you, Mouse! Owl! And I'm back. Hating everything that lives. Hey. It's kind of like 101 Dalmatians. You remember when that movie came out and all the kids wanted Dalmatians for Christmas? You know the Dalmatians are the most insane dog in dog land? They are. You throw a stick to a Dalmatian and come back with his own leg torn off. Yeah. Is that what you threw? I didn't even look. ha ha, Dalmatian. They yell their own name like Geronimo. I mean, that's why firemen have them. They're the only animal that'll run in a burning house like it's a regular house. You know? God, you crazy dog. Go inside. See if there's a baby. Okie doke! I'm back and on fire for some reason. Is that a baby? That's a loaf of bread. How are you alive?
All right. That's Matt Bronger with a piece we're calling Al's Dalmatians, taken from his Letterman debut. This is Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss. The website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Richard X. Heyman. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Heyman is an enormously talented and accomplished singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist whose career spans more than three decades. And for nearly as long, he's been rescuing cats and other animals in New York City, operating just below the radar for much of his career years ago. Rolling Stone called him an undiscovered treasure, a phrase no less apt today. One day after he released his latest album, or albums really, two albums, Tears and Other Stories, two complete CDs totaling 31 tracks, including a couple of animal songs. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome back Richard X. Heyman to Talking Animals. Richard!
Hey!
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals, although it's been some years, but happy to have you here and happy to be speaking to you one day after the official, I guess, more street release of Tears and Other Stories. So congratulations on that, and I hope to talk a little bit more about the albums generally. But one way sort of kind of into that maybe is by asking you about a song on it called Birds that we actually just heard at the top of the show, which in some ways may underscore the adage, no good deed goes unpunished. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the circumstances that prompted you to write the song and that you sort of allude to, in fact, in the song.
Well, living in an urban environment, you have this sort of conflict between city life and wildlife, and you have struggling wildlife in New York City trying to survive with, you know, a bare minimum of natural resources. You know, and they do okay, but I always felt that they're better off with a little help from humans. So that's where that song stemmed from.
And
you know, you do get a lot of vocal abuse from people that aren't into the local wildlife.
Right. Well, and so, yeah, so I guess that's kind of also seems to be at least alluded to in the song is that, you know, there's people that I guess, are critical really of your efforts to.
That's a great understatement.
Yeah. Well, so what is that like? And I guess perhaps more to the point, what would this camp like to see happen instead of what you're doing to help those animals and birds?
Say that again. I'm sorry. What would I?
What would the camp that's being critical of you? What would they suggest should happen otherwise if they're critical of you?
You know, I can't really speak for what their camp is thinking or their motivations. I just feel they just don't have any sort of connection to these animals that are walking and flying around in New York City. You know, they look at everything as sort of a nuisance. Everything's sort of under the category of rats. Squirrels, pigeons, starlings, even sparrows.
Yeah,
they're all just rats.
To them,
all vermin to them, and so you know, I gave up trying to even communicate with them.
I see. So it's not even necessarily any great philosophical gulf, so much as like they just think it's wrong, flat out wrong, because basically anything you're helping or feeding that way is all in the category of vermin. So why would you? Is that kind of
right?
Wow. All right. So now, have there been any times over the years when you've, you know, felt differently at all, or wavered, or you just sort of keep doing what you do, and kind of all the static and the criticism sort of be damned?
Well, you know, I grew up in the suburbs where there was a balance between nature and sort of this suburban sprawl and you know, you didn't really ever face that kind of conflict. So, you know, living in an urban environment, you know, you have to sort of adapt to all these crazy people that are around.
Sure.
And I just do the best I can.
Right. And I guess I'm sure that their view would be, you know, not again that we are heating it too much regardless, but that, you know, that the you're the crazy guy. Because you're the guy, right, going around feeding the birds and the squirrels, et cetera. So, well, sort of walk us through the rounds that you make in a given day when you are feeding those birds and other critters. I mean, where do you go? Are there different areas, different days, or how does it work?
It's a little. I feel like I'm incriminating myself.
Okay. Well, no. If there's something you know, illegal or brushing up against that, then you know, let's move on to a different.
Let's just say that it's a friend of mine that's doing this.
Okay.
Not me personally.
Okay. Some sort of hypothetical.
But, you know,
guy.
I mean,
yeah.
The thing with any city environment is the planners left just enough natural habitat for these animals to remain. So then. You know, you got to sort of wonder, is there enough food for everybody? I mean, they, you know, you see pigeons in Midtown and you wonder how the hell do they survive? I mean, there's nothing. It's all concrete.
Sure.
But they do survive. So, I mean, I'm sure people that do feed the wildlife, you know, just feel a little extra help would be welcome. And it certainly seems to be.
So I guess what I didn't realize, and maybe I then inadvertently asked a pretty dopey question, is I guess I didn't get the sense otherwise that your activities to feed the birds or the squirrels or whatever was actually illegal, but it sounds like it may well be, at least in some instances.
Kind of nebulous. Nobody knows for sure where the law lies with that in New York.
Okay.
There, you know, it falls under possibly the category of littering, but it's very nebulous.
I see. Okay. So it's better just to not even get into, you know, describing more specifically what you do and where, or what your friend.
Like I said, it's not me.
Yeah, right. I know. Sorry, I reminded myself at the end there.
This is just a song that I.
Right. Just some kind of a dreamy
but
thing.
There are a lot of people that do it.
Right. No, I would think. And again, like you say, that you know, when a lot of these areas were built, and yeah, even if there was as much thought as you're attributing to some of these developers and others, that, you know, that they left sort of enough room for these animals and birds to survive. I mean, a lot have certainly happened since that time that would only, it seemed, encroach on those areas and just make it tougher for them to survive.
Right, it is a mystery. You know, you'll see squirrels living in trees that aren't oak trees. You know, there's no acorns. You know, you wonder how they survive. I do think it is a balance between them finding whatever little natural resource there is, and then the aid of humans.
Yeah, right.
You know, and people forget that we're just animals too. We're just part of nature as well.
Right. We're all adapting, I guess, to what's going on. Yeah. Well, let me just let people know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with veteran animal rescuer, singer-songwriter Richard X. Hayman, who yesterday released two new albums, Tears, as in T-I-E-R-S, and Other Stories. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or comment for Richard, you can call 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. So apart from writing a song like Birds, are there ways that the experiences of your friend, you know, feeding the birds and squirrels, and indeed maybe some of the criticisms or some of the points people have made over the years, has informed your music or any part of your sensibility, or are they largely, except for a song like that, pretty much separate things?
Well, I sort of just expressed it in the song Birds.
Yeah.
I write a lot of material and varied subjects, but I just touched upon it in that one song. But
sure.
It's certainly part of my life as an animal lover.
Yeah.
You know, how that creeps into my music as far as, you know, the chords I choose or the melodies, it's hard to say.
Sure,
It's probably all in there.
Right. Yeah, I guess I probably meant more lyrically maybe than musically. But, well, let's talk about Animal Rescue then, because that seems more, less fraught with legalities and hypothetical friends of yours, et cetera. So, first of all, I know we talked about this years ago when you're on the show, but let's just, for those who wouldn't have had a chance to hear that, when did you first start rescuing cats and other critters, and what sort of prompted those first efforts?
Well, it was in the early to mid-80s I started. What happened was my wife, Nancy, declared that she wanted to get a cat. Just out of the blue, we were living in a small tenement apartment in the East Village. And I was just kind of bemused by the whole thing because I just never even thought twice about cats before that. Wasn't, you know, familiar with cats. I never had a cat growing up. I didn't even know anybody that had a cat except in New Jersey where I grew up. You know, I had dogs growing up, and I loved dogs.
Sure.
You know, had nothing against cats, but I just
didn't have experience with
their
them.
Appeal as a cat.
Sure.
I mean, as a pet, I'm sorry. So the next day, I came home from work, and there was a kitten sitting on our living room floor. And I'll never forget walking around the little turn from the kitchen into the living room and seeing this calico kitten on the floor, making eye contact with it. I just immediately fell in love with it. And first thing I said to Nancy was, okay, if we're going to keep this kitten, we got to get a second one because I don't want it to be alone all day while we're at work. And that sort of triggered this mania. I just became a total cat fanatic. And I start to notice stray cats in the neighborhood that I probably passed hundreds of times before that I never noticed behind chain link fences and alleyways. Like most people, I started out as a feeder. I just wanted to make sure they were well fed. And then I quickly realized that that wasn't the solution to the problem, that they need to get off the street if possible. So I just started getting involved with some rescue people. And somebody gave me my first Have a Heart trap. And I just started rescuing kittens and cats and just went on for a few decades.
Sure. And so maybe you could describe what that kind of trap is or what you, you know, if there's any difference now, what you use currently in
well,
those efforts.
The standard, what they call a Have a Heart trap, that's probably different names. It's just kind of a metal mesh trap with a little trigger plate about halfway down on the floor of it, and cat walks in, and that pressure standing on that trigger plate closes the drawer behind it, and you know, you lure it in with food at the end. So
sure,
that's your basic trap, and then
once the cat's in the trap, then what do people like you then do with that cat?
Well, the very first thing you do is cover it.
Okay.
With a towel, because the cats go into a panic.
Sure.
So they calm down immediately as soon as you fully cover it and they're in the dark. And in the beginning, I was sort of taking it on all by myself. I was trying to trap and socialize and adopt out. And then after a few months of that, I realized I didn't really have the right temperament for the adoption side, because I just didn't really trust anybody. You know, I was just so attached to these cats.
Sure.
I was just so wary where they were going, and I just got into this kind of mental state where, you know, I didn't want anybody to take the cats, but you know,
couldn't keep them all. Right.
So I started to find out about some more rescue groups and different people that were into adoptions, facilities that adopted out. And my role after that was as the trapper, as the person that actually caught the cats. And so for about 25 years, I was sort of known as the go-to guy to do the trapping. And I had a bunch of different traps. I invented a trap that I used a lot, the bottomless trap, I called it.
What circumstance was that for? Obviously, you saw the need from your years of using the trap that you've already described. What's different about this trap, and what situations does it address?
Well, every cat is different, and you have some cats that are very trap wary. And every now and then I'd come up against a cat that just would not go into the regular have a heart trap. And I start to think, you know, how can I get this cat into a trap? And there were some cats that would let me get, you know, fairly close while I put the food down. So I realized if I was like within 3 or 4 feet of the cat, I could probably put something on top of them quickly. And, you know, then it's like, how do you keep them inside it? So I came up with this idea to just build a trap. It was a box without a floor. And then there was like a little track that you could slide the floor in after the cat was inside. You know, you placed it on top of the cat with, you know, the food was there on a paper plate. Then you would slide this little wooden floor. And the cat, every time, would just step right up on the floor as it was sliding in.
Hmm.
And then once it was slid in, just locked it up, and it was in there, and then you cover it up.
I see.
And it worked great.
Yeah. So is that kind of your innovation there? Is that kind of the tend to be the trap that you use then primarily?
No, like I say, you know, most cats will go into the regular trap.
Okay,
when,
so this
when
is
I realized
just for...
that, you know, the situation called for the bottomless trap, I would use that.
I see.
Then there's also a thing called a drop trap, which is basically a similar kind of trap to the bottomless trap, except it's like a string pull where you would string, you know, you'd have like a stick that you would pull and it would fall onto the cat.
Sure.
And then there's another one, like a drop door trap, which is a string pull trap that had like a sort of drop door that you would just pull with a string after the cat. And those were good for getting like entire litters at once.
Oh, wow.
You could get, you know, 2 or 3 full-grown cats in there at once.
Oh my God! This some of this sounds like stuff from the Acme organization. Sounds like some very clever innovations that you cooked up here, Richard. So,
yeah.
Well, so obviously you developed this expertise and this reputation, the go-to guy for trapping, as you said, and obviously innovated some traps. So then, kind of take us through, like, once you've trapped a cat or a litter of cats, then what? Once you realize you weren't really the guy to also handle the adopting out portion. So what happens from there? What organization or organizations then do you take these to?
Well, I would have a strict policy. Once I got into this mode where people called me, I would always, my first thing would be, you know, there's got to be a plan in place for this cat before I commit to do this, because I don't want to trap a cat and be stuck with it. So that was sort of the bottom line criteria. And then I got involved with a group called City Critters, and they had a lot of volunteers that did adoption, and they started adopting out of Petco. And then there was another organization called Be In Kind. They had another Petco store where they did adoption. So, you know, there were places to bring the cats. And
sure.
You know, that was always the hardest part.
Yeah.
Was
handing them
what's
over.
The plan for this cat? Because
right. So typically, I guess you would trap them. Then they would be, you know, checked out, over spayed, neutered, etc. And then otherwise, sort of made sure they were ready to be adopted. And at that point, whether it was City Critters, Being Kind, whatever, then they would take them to Petco or wherever for the actual adoption.
Right. Yeah. The first thing would be get the cat to a vet.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure it was healthy. Get them spayed, neutered. Test it for feline leukemia and AIDS and get their shots and things like that. And then the adoption people would take it from there.
Yeah.
But it got to the point where living in New York City, it was just an endless rain of calls. I mean, it was like half a dozen calls a day.
That you mean that you would receive, having become the go-to guy, and they'd say, hey, Richard, down the street or across the...
Yeah, it got to the point where I was barely doing music. My whole life was consumed with cat rescue and dog rescue as well.
Okay.
And occasionally you'd get calls for chicken or a rooster out on the loose.
Wow.
Kind of bizarre things.
Well, so how did you kind of rein that in, since you, you know, have other things you want to do, including making music, but I'm sure it was hard to say no to some of these people.
For a while I didn't rein it in. It was just sort of taking over my life.
Okay.
Which is fine, you know, and it was very rewarding, but
yeah.
It's certainly emotionally stressful.
Sure.
At a certain point after about 25 years, I started to kind of go into semi-retirement.
I see.
From the rescue thing.
Right. So how many days a week now have you kind of done it that way and say, hey, I just can't respond to every call and I can't necessarily go out every day?
I sort of let it be known to most of the groups that I was volunteering for that I'm kind of going into
scaling back a bit.
Retirement.
Sure.
And just real emergencies. And,
okay.
Sort of slowed down a bit, you know.
Sure. Well, maybe even now, but especially before maybe you sort of went into semi-retirement, I'd be curious to know if, you know, having done it such a long time and developed obviously such great expertise, you know, in a given day or week or month, however you want to measure it, did you see things that you found encouraging or discouraging? In other words, did you start to think over time, hey, the spay-neuter message, you know, that any number of organizations and radio shows, I guess for that matter, routinely trumpet, you know, aren't necessarily getting through, or was it not really relevant because these were mostly feral cats, I guess, that you were dealing with to begin with. So the idea of, you know, trying to impose the whole spay neuter thing there was, you know, fraught with its own kind of unlikely challenges.
It's, you know, it's an endless battle. Go out, you do the rescues, you get those particular cats spay neutered. And, you know, sometimes you get involved with you know, spay-neuter release where the cats are just too feral and everybody agreed that they would be better off just living in the colony they were from where they were being well fed. You know, these all have to be circumstances that work out for the benefit of the cat.
Yeah.
So if they're coming from a very organized colony and they're spayed and neutered, so they're not going to reproduce, and there's plenty of feeders.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's the only solution, because the hardest part is to find homes for these cats. And there's many more cats than there are people that want to adopt them.
Sure, sure.
But, you know, you just did the best you could.
Right. And this may or may not also brush up against a question that you might not feel comfortable answering. Can you say how many cats currently live with you at this point, or is that also sort of?
Well, we've always just had we always really just have two of our own cats.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, we have a few that come through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but not for long. You know, that are
just sort of more fostering almost.
Yeah, there's a little bit of fostering and. Sometimes if, you know, in the old days, you know, you'd get like a litter of kittens and they all might have upper respiratory. So, you know, you'd nurse them back to health.
Yeah.
Before they would move on.
Okay. Well, that's great that you've been able to sort of, I just imagined over time that you would sort of soften your, you know, your resistance to having, you know, that there would at least be more and more over time just because, you know, again, like you said, you kind of got those emotional connections with some and that. It'd be hard to just confine it to two sort of permanent residents. So that's good to hear.
That's where all the groups like City Critters and Being Kind come in handy.
Sure, sure.
They deal in the large, you know, of cats that come through.
Well, this may bring us to one of our email questions. Someone writes in, great work that your guest is doing, asking you, do you have a favorite rescue cat?
There's been many favorites over the years.
Yeah.
That have come in out of my traps. I mean, it's just so many. I mean, literally, we're talking thousands of cats.
Right, right.
We're
yeah.
looking at about 25 years.
Wow, yeah.
But maybe more.
Yeah, it seems like it would be more at this point. But, Richard, we're sort of nearing the end of our time, but I do want to, you know, sort of swing back around to the music because,
yes, the music.
Right. Remember that? Yeah. But I mean, you've also,
see, that's what happens.
Over the years, you know, been a guest on music shows that I've done. And, as you know, I'm a big, big fan. In fact, it's really interesting. You know, I over the last few days, I posted some things on Facebook that you're going to be on and sent out kind of my customary email, newsletter blast. And I got a really great, interesting array of responses. I mean, one Facebook guy is a, I think, a long time sort of rock and roll manager sort of posted like, hey, yeah, I think I remember that guy. He put, there was something in 88 that somebody in so-and-so's label, and I, you know, thought, well, I, that must be Living Room, and other people said, yeah, I, you know, I remember when he was on Sire, and then some people that I think know you more directly have gotten cats from you and said, oh, I love Richard, but also I love, you know, when he's playing with the Doughboys, or just, you know, kind of mixing both your admiration for your work with cats, but also your musical work. So do you want to sort of just speak to, I mean, it's fairly ambitious these days to, well, either a double album, but in this case, it's actually two separate albums released together, Tears and Other Stories. We just felt like, okay, well, I've just got all these great songs and let's just get them all kind of collected and out.
I got carried away, no question.
Okay.
I wanted to do a piano album for years, which meant, you know, basing most of the songs on around the keyboard and as opposed to guitar.
Yeah.
And I started to write these songs, and they were just coming kind of one after another, and they were really unconsciously or subconsciously telling the story of my relationship with Nancy. At a certain point, after a few songs, I realized what was happening, and then I got very conscious about it and tried to just complete it, and it just turned out to be a lot of material. And
yeah,
I edited as much as I could, and Nancy wanted me to do a single album, and she was probably right.
Yeah,
and you know what I should have done in retrospect, I was thinking now, is I should have just called the other album like the bonus tracks, because it is psychological. People don't really have, you know, the time or the inclination as much as, you know, like the 70s and 80s when, you know, people still listen to vinyl. And,
right.
You know, it's just a whole different mindset now with the technology. So
digital downloads.
You know, I understand the wall I'm up against.
Yeah.
But
nonetheless,
yeah, I'm still very happy, you know, with the results.
Yeah. Well, it's really, really terrific. It's called Tears, T-I-E-R-S, and Other Stories. And the physical albums are out now. There's also available through, you know, iTunes and your other digital download outlets. And more information and stuff, RichardXHayman.com. And here's the other thing, too, just before we go, Richard. Now, how much touring, you know, because I don't think at least you make it too far out of that general area, but maybe there are broader tours that I just haven't been aware of.
Well, at a certain point, I stopped flying, so that failed.
Oh, okay.
No major operations, but, you know, we're just sort of thinking of what we're going to do to
behind this
the record. We're going to probably do some, you know, New York shows, at least, you know, a theater show somewhere. And the idea always has been a visual presentation for this album, which means we want to get dancers, like ballet dancers.
Oh, wow.
To do some choreography for certain songs. We have friends doing films for other songs, and then we would perform a few. Band with Nancy on bass.
Wow.
So we're at the planning stage now. We're going to probably get a theater here in New York and do like a kind of multimedia
big production
presentation.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye out for that, and that and other information can be found at RichardXHayman.com. Richard, thanks again for joining us on Talking Animals. Thanks for all your great work
Animals, Duncan.
But
thank
also
you.
All your great music over the years. Again, it's just wonderful stuff. Tears and Other Stories is the latest.
Greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, man. Take care. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. And you're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize. The winner will receive Richard's two new albums, a copy of the collection, the double collection, sort of, Tears and Other Stories. To the first person who goes 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this version of this well-known animal tune, sort of selected with our conversation with Richard and mine. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Thank you. All right. Well, that may or may not ring a bell as people think about it more. But anyways, the show goes on, as we mentioned earlier. We were talking a couple times about Birdstock. The proceeds from Saturday's Birdstock event will be donated to Friends of Tampa Bay National Wildlife Refuge, a nonprofit. And we now have Barbara Howard on the line from that organization to talk a little bit more about those things. Barbara, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals. Appreciate
it. Thanks for asking us.
Absolutely. So maybe first we could just sort of tell us a bit about Friends of the Tampa Bay National Wildlife Refuges.
Sure. We help Fish and Wildlife with the Tampa Bay Refuges, and the refuges include Egmont Key, which everybody knows, right out.
So, Barbara, hold on one sec. Are you somewhere where someone's talking right behind you, or are we hearing something else? Okay, because we're hearing another voice. Okay, all right.
Yeah, I can hear that too. Sorry.
Okay. Okay.
So anyhow, Egmont Key is right out in the mouth of Tampa Bay there.
Okay.
And pretty much everybody knows where that might be. Passage Key is right south of it, and the Pinellas Refuges are in Boca Ciega Bay, just west of the Skyway. They're the mangrove islands. So we'll help Fish and Wildlife with cleanups on those islands because there's trash that washes in from our storm drains. We'll help with bird counts. We'll help with all sorts of things that they need doing.
Barbara?
Yeah. Oh, I can hear you, sorry.
Okay. Well, no, you seem to just sort of stop talking, so I wasn't sure if you meant to or not, but... tell us then kind of what the funds that hopefully will be, gobs and gobs of funds, generated by Saturday's Birdstock event. What will those, sort of be earmarked for in particular? How will they help the organization?
We will use them to help Fish and Wildlife with restoration and enhancement of those islands that are set aside for the birds. So if we need to pull trash out of the islands, or if we need to do some exotic plant removals or pull monofilament fishing line from the trees so that the birds are not injured by any of that and so that they have the proper habitat to nest and rest in. So we will use the proceeds for that. We want to make sure that they have the optimum place to go since our, as you know, humans, we love to go to the beach, so we're kind of taking over the public beaches on the land side here.
Sure.
And we want them to have the areas that are set aside as national wildlife refuges for their own and make them safe and good places to be.
Sure. And you find that you know, people who aren't, you know, steeped in your organization or the work that you're doing, aren't as aware of the need for this or don't think as much in terms of birds as opposed to, you know, animals and other wildlife in this regard?
I think people just don't think about it that, you know, we need to make room for the wildlife, and they just don't understand that actions that we do can have a huge impact on them and cause declines in their population.
Sure.
So we need to be aware of those things.
Yeah, well, as Pete Gallagher, who of course is a co-producer of Birdstock, but also on the air here every Saturday morning with Florida Folk Show, said to me in a note, you know, kind of observed that most people think of you know, such kind of refugees as places preserving animals, not necessarily birds, and it's sort of again just sometimes you got to sort of educate people or just get them thinking more birds if their first impulse is to think animals for these kinds of areas.
Right. And when we have Fish and Wildlife and National Wildlife Refuges, it does include all types of animals, including birds and even the little crawly things in the ground. So we want to protect everybody. And Egmont Key even has a very large population of gopher tortoises that have not gotten any of the diseases that the gopher tortoises on the mainland have gotten. So it's a good place for them, too.
And it's at one point, I guess, I'm relatively new to the area, so I'm not as expert on this as I probably should be, but it sounded like at one point this was like a hugely important area. I mean, like, you know, nationally, if not beyond, in terms of the pelican rookeries.
Right. Tarpon Key, which is just west of the bridge leading up to the Skyway, used to be the biggest pelican rookery in the Florida area and probably pretty much the world.
Yeah.
So we need to kind of bring them back there by keeping that habitat pristine and hopefully, you know, showing them that, okay, there's no more dangers here. We're going to try to get you back here. A lot of those pelicans have gone over to Egmont Key. The south end of Egmont Key is set aside for the wildlife only, for the birds only. So the public can't go into that south end. They can certainly utilize the north end of the island and the central part of the island. But on the south end, a lot of our pelicans have gone over to there, but they certainly would like to have more space, like on Tarpon Key.
Sure, and we want to get them more space. We love pelicans.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah. So Barbara, we just have maybe one more minute or so, but we're of course speaking on the 1 year, you know, again, anniversary seems like not quite the right word, but anyway, of the Gulf oil spill. Any comments or observations, you know, particularly relevant to, you know, to your work?
And the oil spill was heartbreaking, just to see the birds and the pelicans coming up on shore just covered in oil, and
sure,
you know how horrible that is. It's, you know, even if you can get the oil off of their feathers and everything, you can't get it out of their system. So it is still causing impacts that we don't even know the extent of at this point.
Yeah, yeah, shoot. Well, sounds like you guys are doing everything you can in all kinds of ways. And anything else we should know about Tampa Bay National Wildlife Refuge? I actually want to make sure people know that the website is Tampa Bay Refuge. R-E-F-U-G-E-S, plural.org for more information, not only, of course, about bird stock, but all the work you do year-round. But anything else you want to add before we gear up for bird stock itself?
I would just tell everybody, come on down, have a great time. I think it's going to be a wonderful festival, and like you said, the money is going to help with the refuges for the birds.
Yeah, great. All right, well, Barbara Howard, thanks so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals, and we'll encourage everybody to get out to Birdstock, too. Again, 60 bands, musical acts, over 12 hours of music this Saturday, April 23rd, beginning at noon, Corey Avenue Business District in St. Pete, and so we'll hope everybody will get out there for even just some of the day. If you got other plans, you can still get over there for 2 or 3 hours and support Birdstock, and of course, by doing so, support Tampa Bay National Wildlife Refuge. So thank you again, Barbara, for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. We have just about to reach the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, April 27th, when our guest will be Wendy Kelly, Pet Peeves Animal Training, an animal behaviorist who gets pretty remarkable results by just about all accounts I've been able to determine so far. And in fact, we'll include a case study, a specific one, in this conversation. So that's next Wednesday, April 27th, on Talking Animals at 11 a.m. I hope you'll join me then. Also, if you visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past editions of Talking Animals. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page or Twitter feed and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott. Why did I stop right then? Because I'm fixing a CD thing. But anyways, just named Scott Elliott was WMNF Volunteer of the Year. Congrats to him for that. His all-souls version of It's the Music will be airing next from noon to 3. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune as promised. It's another selection from Richard X. Heyman's two new albums, Tears and Other Stories. This one's actually about cat rescue, fittingly enough. It's called No Time to Rest on Sunday. And that's going to take us right up to the NPR News and then Scott Elliott and his great, great show right here on WMNF Tampa. See you next Wednesday, 11 a.m. on Talking Animals.
There's a time to cry somewhere behind the wall. There's a time to rest on Sunday. On this quiet night, the snow's beginning to fall. There's a time to rest on Sunday. So hold me close as we meet before the sun. All the work is never done. as we plan to rest on Sunday. It's love and war that never leaves your mind. There's a time to rest on Sunday.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh.